From Los Angeles, California, from downtown Los Angeles, you're listening to Radio Suzy One on the World Wide Web, broadcasting from Los Angeles and other parts of the world. You can also hear us in Skype and over the internet. And if you listen to this show, you know, when you listen to this show, you turn the lights down low. Here she is.
Hi. I'm Dr. Susan Block, your love doctor, your mother confessor, your ever so slightly twisted little sister, your daughter of the American Revelation, your horny housewife, and your friend, you know. I try to be your friend, and a friend of mine brought me a guest tonight, and I'm very excited to share Radio Suzy One tonight with David Tsai.
How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm very, very good.
Good.
Nice to be here.
Good. It's very nice to meet you.
Mm-hmm.
David is a yoga revolutionary, I think. Is that what you would call yourself? Or some people have called you?
I'm the bad boy of yoga. I have been for years.
The bad boy of
yoga. Yeah. I did it the other way around, and I kept doing it because that's the way it felt right. The way that I got to this was in the Bosnian War. And you don't know how... I mean, one thing that you get out of a war is that you don't know how long you're going to be around.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever is up for grabs is up for grabs. And you take life immediately. There's no deliberation. There's no dance.
Wow. Peace through yoga. I want to find out more about that. But first, I want to mention that the friend that introduced me to you is Julian Nitzberg, which some of my audience may remember as the director and writer, librettist of The Beastly Bombing. And The Beastly Bombing has performed at this beastly place here in the soul of downtown L.A. that we call Dr. Suzy Speakeasy. We've had a lot of fun with Julian and his gang of merry pranksters and musical sangsters. I didn't say skanksters. You noticed that, right? and so let's see. Oh, and they were at last year Eros Day. In fact, David's brother, let's get connected here, is Andrew, and Andrew is in the room. And not on a microphone. You might be able to hear him say hi from the back of the room. Say it louder. Hello. There he is. He has an English accent, which we didn't know because we thought he was an American. Turns out he was a foreigner.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He pretended to be the American president of the United States. And he had a beautiful pas de deux with Jesus. It was really... really inspiring. Anyway, David is Andrew's brother, and for some reason has a different last name.
Yeah, I have a different last name because I came out of Yugoslavia as Sai Stojanovic, and I dropped the Stojanovic and just left the Sai and put David on, so it's easier for people to pronounce.
Gotcha. So were you?
You ain't getting any more than that,
right? Were you both born in Yugoslavia? Or
No. We were both born in London.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
In London.
Yeah.
And did you go to Yugoslavia to, like, get in touch with some roots? Or
No. I just went there as a radio journalist.
Oh.
I've been teaching yoga for 24 years. 24 years ago, you'd starve a life teaching yoga. So I've done everything from radio journalism to running restaurants and la, la, la.
Okay.
So I went there, got caught in the war, and stayed.
So you didn't go to report on the war?
No, I went there to run a radio station for an apolitical organization, which was run by Serbs. And then we were broadcasting to three sides. It was a three-sided war. And I interviewed everybody from Mother Teresa to Dalai Lama, James Brown, Harry Dean Stanton, saying stop the war.
Stop the war. The three-sided war.
Yeah, the three-sided war. Nobody knew who they were blowing up. And so I then ended up having my passport stolen. I was on the run from the military police. I ended up teaching soldiers yoga for food. And it got very desperate for me. And I said, if I get out of this alive, I'll never do anything but teach yoga. So I got out alive. And in the war, what I used to do was I used to whack up the music, and that was my drug. Mm-hmm. That was my big drug. And when I got back to England, I carried on practicing that way, but the big honchos in the world of yoga just said, you know, avoid his classes. He's a lunatic. He moves. He uses music. But all the clubbers would come to my class because they love Cuban rap. Mm-hmm. And so I was, you know, I had to use KY jelly to get into my classes. And, wow. Yeah, because it was so rammed full of people.
Upset the yoga purists.
Yeah.
Who are only...
Yeah,
there was pure sweat.
Exactly, and just, you know, I mean, normally a class of yoga sounds like a sort of asthma club, you know, everybody's breathing heavily, and for me, you know, it was boring. I carried on, and I always believed in being the way that I feel, what I feel deep inside of me, my sexuality, what's going on inside of my feelings is the real intelligence. We have two things, we have a thought and a feeling. A thought is a theory, and a feeling is innate. And what we do with a problem with human beings...
A thought is a theory and a feeling is...
Innate.
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 Oh.
It's within the body.
Okay.
Our bodies will tell us exactly what they want. If you feel horny, you feel horny. It doesn't matter how much you suppress it or think around it. That's what you're feeling.
Mm.
So that's where the split comes in a human being.
Mm.
So I always believed in going with what was real for me. And because of that, I got labeled, and they said, you know, you destroyed... I came out in Time Out, said, you know, David Sides destroyed 5,000 years of yoga. Be at his club. It rocks. So, and the Times, the woman came to review my club, and she said, I came to do a hatchet job on David Tsai.
Yeah.
She said, I stayed up and watched the awards till 4 in the morning and felt invincible. But she phoned me. She said, you know, I spoke with a lot of people and they said they felt very turned on. Do you have a problem with that? I said, why the hell would I have a problem with that? She said, well, you know, they said they felt sexy. I said, I'm so happy that they feel sexy and turned on. Jesus
sure.
Christ, that at least they're in touch with what's vital within inside of themselves. So it's become yoga, this... You know, in a lot of ways, another type of spirituality, another way to be austere, to be elitist, where it's not about that at all.
Well, yoga is such a broad word,
sure.
Really. It encompasses so many things.
Of course.
From total austerity to a kind of sensuality.
Well, may I add to that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yoga simply is union. So if I'm feeling whatever I'm feeling, if I'm with that, then I'm totally with that. That's yoga. So people say, oh, should I stop smoking? I said, no, don't stop smoking. When you're smoking, really enjoy it. Mm. Absolutely fucking enjoy it. Don't half think, oh, this is terrible for me.
You
oh,
might
and the other
be getting
half
a
want.
New yoga fan.
Okay.
Right now.
Be with it.
Yeah. I see one in the making.
Yeah, you see...
Well, I don't think this person has ever known a yoga teacher that said he could keep smoking.
Absolutely. Be where you want to be. You know, what we do is we don't trust nature.
Mm.
We try to control nature. And nature, I mean, right now as we're sitting here, you know, it's carrying on and keeping our bodies functioning. Our pure functionality comes from nature.
Now, how did you discover yoga?
I discovered yoga because my body... was basically fucking up. I mean, I had 12 tumors in my body.
12 tumors?
12 big tumors in my body. And they
like
were... yeah.
Cancerous or not?
No, they were they were benign.
Okay,
and
but they're still kind of lurking around.
Mm-hmm. And then I'd have spasms in the body, so I had a spastic colon. So every time I had stress, I'd pass out.
And this is when you're a radio DJ? Or
no, this is way before that. That was before... This is like... 24 years ago.
Oh.
So I went to, I heard about some Tibetan yogis who were Czechoslovakian who trained in Tibet, and they said they could cure me, and the medical profession said, oh, I'd have to have a colostomy bag, you know, an intestinal bypass, and I said, no, there's no way I'm going to do that. I'll live on, you know, I'll live on painkillers the rest of my life. So I went to these yogis, and if I cut a long story short, I had 9 sessions. By the 9th, I was, like, over the moon. I was feeling great. It was like I had my life back. And I went to the hospital where I was due for the operation, and they gave me a scan, and they came back, and the doctors were looking shocked and white, and they said, what happened to you? I said, what do you mean, what happened to me? They said, well, we looked into your body, and you have, you, there's nothing there. It's clear. It's clean.
Hmm.
So I told them what I did, and they said, well, we don't understand that. I said, well, clearly that's your problem. I'm out of here. Goodbye. And that's when I went and studied and became a yoga teacher. I did everything from isolation tanks to all sorts of primitive rituals to find the extent and limit of the body, and there is none. There really isn't.
Well, there's so many different kinds of yoga, even if you look at it in a traditional way, you know,
yeah.
Hatha yoga, tantric yoga, I mean, there, I don't know all the names, but is there a name for the kind of yoga you do?
Yeah, it's called yoga beats.
Yoga beats.
Yeah.
So that has to do with the music?
It's to do with the rhythm, that everything is a rhythm, that your heart is beating. Everything is, there's a rhythm inside, you know, and your pulse is a rhythm, and everything works to rhythm. And so for me, when I started moving with rhythm, it cuts out the circularity of my thoughts. I mean, if you listen to your thoughts or you listen to my thoughts, they're fucking boring. I mean, they go round and round and round and round. I got to call this person. I got to buy this. I got to do this. And actually, meditating or listening to it, it's kind of boring. It's a rumination of your thoughts. So what I did was I pattern interrupt. I use music. And music gets me out of my skull. It gets me out of my head and into my body. So I, you know, it wasn't like I thought, well, let me put music together with yoga. I was caught in the middle of a fucking war. And it was so frightening, I wanted to cut out the sound of the war. So
right.
I just whacked up the music, and by osmosis, I found this way. It wasn't like, because I taught traditional yoga before the war, but it got, suddenly there was, the emphasis was on, how do I feel good right now? How do I feel it at this moment? Because this may be the only moment I got. You know, when a bullet goes past your face, 1 foot from your face, you see your life a different way.
So what city were you in?
I was in Belgrade.
So now you didn't go there to report on the war. You went there to start a radio station.
Yeah.
So now why did you stay once the bullets started whizzing past you?
Because
nuts.
I'm nuts. I'm fucking nuts. No, I had a... I fell in love with this fabulous baby.
Ah.
And she was so gorgeous. And and then oh, yeah. And then I just fell in love with
the spirit.
Isn't
that funny how love so often blossoms in war, like flowers in the dung?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, so you were in love and in a war.
In a war, and I just then fell in love with the Serbian people too. They were amazing. It's like, you know, I got to one point and I had no money, and I was saying to a friend of mine, can I get some more of that bread? He says, listen, fuck your money. Don't even ask me. Take it. Because if you don't take it, you don't treat me like a brother.
Wow.
And that sort of stuff threw my traditional English upbringing out the window.
Mm.
And I fell in love with these people. And they, you know, they stood by me and I stood by them. So
and
I became like a boat.
That was the time when a lot of people fell in hate with the Serbs.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that, you know, the U.S. went to war, finally decided to take sides. I mean,
yeah,
there were these three or four sides, you know, and it was totally confused. I was confused by all of it. But it just seemed like people bickering, like almost like a family argument.
Yeah,
but,
it was.
But, you know, Clinton, he took the side against the Serbs. I'm not sure what side he took. Was it the Bosnian... What side did Clinton take?
I don't remember.
But he was bombing Serbia.
Yeah,
right?
He was bombing Serbia. But he was asking how many people were going to be in the building at night.
He was doing a more. He was a little more civilized about it than Bush, who doesn't bother to ask how many people are in the building at night, you know, before they bomb. But still, then all, you know, it's bombing, and that does tend to kill people. And in so doing, the Serbs were certainly demonized in the United States. And I remember thinking, it's just interesting that they're trying to make them into the Nazis. And they didn't fit into the Nazi sort of thing. They kept showing that one image over and over of the guy at the barbed wire fence.
Yeah.
And trying to make that, you know, trying to drum up this hatred, I guess.
That's right.
And succeeding to a great degree. I mean, I don't, you know, I remember feeling like, gee, I was kind of pissed at Clinton because I had defended him through the whole, you know, presidential coup de toit, you know.
Yeah.
and I defended his right to have a sex life and to not be perfect husband and then here he goes and starts bombing. And yes, he's a more polite bomber than Bush, but still, it was a little disturbing. And I guess, you know, being in the eye of the storm must have been interesting, to say the least. It must have been really disturbing to be a Serb and to have everybody kind of hating on you, you know, and you got this lunatic Milosevic who's kind of just trying to keep things...
Yeah, he was hated by his people.
I guess so. I'm sure he had... He was a megalomaniac. He wasn't, to my way of thinking, a Hitler. But it must have been interesting for you to be there with them, to be a friend of these people that were demonized around the world.
That's why I stood with them, because, I mean, as an Englishman, I changed my name to Stojanovic. And I was on Serbian tape and on television. And they said, why did you change your name to Stojanovic? And I said, well, when the whole world stands against one nation, there's got to be something powerful about that nation. And what was powerful was how they stood against Milosevic. They stood against him. Yeah, 90% of the atrocities were caused by the Serbs. But the ordinary people, they were still needing insulin. They were still needing bread. They were still needing milk. Mm. So I was a Balkan postman, Pat. I was coming in and out with supplies. And then I took mafia money and Serbian mafia money. We came to the States and we filmed... with Serbian money, votes for peace that went out across the war zone. Mm-hmm. And that got an ovation at the Moscow Film Festival. You know, and Milosevic finally fell.
Well, wow. So, okay, so now you are kind of taking your message and your... Do you have a technique? Or?
Yeah, I mean, my technique is sensuality within the body. That you come back to where your state is. I'm about changing your state, getting people to a point of pleasure inside of themselves, and it has to be, they have to feel their own sexuality.
Well, now I try to do that too.
I heard about that.
But, I mean, yoga, I was going to say yoga can involve pain, but of course pleasure can involve pain too, you know.
Yeah.
And there is a yoga to sexual pleasure, you know, certainly.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're trying to teach a woman who's never had an orgasm, you know, it's a kind of yoga, I guess, to learn about your body and to relax your body, to breathe deep, to squeeze and release certain muscles, to find those muscles, to separate them, locate them. Yeah, I guess I guess it is kind of a yoga.
Yeah.
But so you do this? Do you have people masturbating? I mean, virtually?
Oh, they come. I had a woman. She was in Down Dog. She's a teacher, big teacher from Austria. And I teach Teachers Association, so teachers have been teaching for years. And she was frozen in Down Dog. And I get everybody to move and be sensuous and move their hips and gyrate. Mm. And she wasn't moving. And I started, you know, because it just comes out of my mouth sometimes. And we had this really sexy, funky music playing in the background. And I started screaming at her and saying, come on, move your fucking hips. Come on, you love to do it. Do it. Come on. Come on. And I was screaming. And I was screaming to such a point that I thought, well, if the police come in and arrest me, it'll be a fair cop. I mean, you know, I deserve to be locked up for what I was saying. And at the end, she came over to me. She says, can I speak to you? I says, my little Jewish heart is really beating fast. So she says, I want to talk to you. Can I say something to you? I says,
Natasha.
Yeah, okay. And I'm thinking, what the hell is she going to say? She says, I want to thank you. I feel my hips for the first time in 20 years. And her eyes were glazed. And she was, you know, she was on. So.
Well, every man likes to give pleasure to women.
Well, yes.
I mean, if they're hetero. Yeah. Even not. You know, that's delightful.
Absolutely.
To be able to give that woman that pleasure, huh?
But for a man to give pleasure to a woman is the place of the man. The man's place anyway is to have security and to give.
Yeah,
when he that's the real bang.
Yeah.
That's the real bang.
So you get that real bang. Are most of your students women or
a lot of them. I mean, I get men too, you know, half of my class are men. But in Europe, it's sort of three quarters to a quarter, man.
And do you Are you still with the Serb girl that you fell in love with?
No,
you broke
on.
Up with her.
Yeah,
so
on.
Now, what have you moved on to?
I moved on to oh, now you're asking. Oh, she's fabulous. She's half Japanese,
uh-huh.
And the other half is, I think, Welsh. And she's wild. She's just.
So this is your girlfriend?
At the moment.
Yeah, at the moment.
At the moment.
At the moment.
Yeah.
How would she like to hear at the moment?
Because she understands that too.
Or it's a moment by moment kind
but
of thing.
But it's in the moment.
In the moment.
I don't know beyond this point where I'm going. I want to, listen, when I was in Serbia, the Serbian soldier said to me, he said, you know, perfect way to live is like dead man. You live like dead man, no possibility of future.
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to live, I want to say everything to you right now. I don't want to hold back anything. I don't want to walk away from here with not saying it all. Because I don't know. I have no fucking idea.
Right.
That's my religion. That's it.
That's your religion.
Seriously.
You know, that's an interesting religion in a way. I mean, it's kind of, I mean, we've heard that religion, the living by the moment.
Yeah.
But lately, because of the elections in America here, you know, we're having this election.
Yeah.
And it's a big thing because we're, I guess, getting rid of Bush.
Mm.
So, you know, that's a big deal.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And we've got all these different people running. And there's this idea of what they call the politics of hope.
Yes.
Which, in my mind, is kind of the politics of bullshit. I mean, but it's a little bit about, you know, like wanting some. It's a little bit like The Secret. You know, I want, and so I will get.
Yes.
I mean, what is happening now? What am I gonna do now? What is this politician gonna do now? That to me is more significant than what we can hope for, what we can pray for. But nevertheless, this is the word of the moment.
Right.
It was also the word of the moment in 1992 when Clinton ran and was the man from hope.
Right.
You know, it was the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
This whole idea, because people are unhappy.
Yes.
They're unhappy with Bush for various reasons.
Yes.
The economy, the war. Just the obnoxiousness of it all, the reputation of the United States just kind of trashed around, and and so there's this politics of hope, of hoping for the future. That and no one wants to say exactly what we're supposed to be hoping for, except change, which is another one of those buzzwords that means.
Yeah, what's that?
Very.
I'm
not sure.
No,
I'm not sure. And one thing I like about yoga. I mean, I'm kind of I kind of think of myself as a yoga person.
Okay.
You know, I like to do my way of yoga, which isn't
right.
The other way either. Hmm. I mean, I'm not a traditionalist either, but I think of it as, you know, something you can do.
Right. Okay. I don't think of it as something you can do.
I do.
I think, okay, so
okay.
For me it's something that you be.
Well, yeah, there's that.
I mean, you know,
you know it's the
point,
same
yeah.
thing. It's just, it's all something right. you're something active as opposed
Absolutely.
To just hoping and fantasizing and
yeah.
politicians playing on your fantasies and religious leaders playing on your
right.
fantasies of what will happen when you die, of what will happen when you get a new
God.
President, of what will happen when you get rich, of what will happen when you finally meet the one you love, of what will happen when you finally get what you deserve. You know, this is all what religion and politics is like
yeah.
feeding people. And yoga to me, and whether you call it being or doing, you still just, that's
yeah.
it. It's not about, you know, some kind of pie in the sky, heaven or fantasy.
No, it's not. And it has to be. That's why everybody, you know, when you start talking about politics, and you start talking about what can be and what might be and what should be and trying to guarantee the future and hold it all in place. That's why everybody ends up masturbating because, you know, at
well,
least
exactly.
you got that on.
Now, when I was
a
youngster and I was first learning yoga,
yeah.
I did have some of my first orgasms involuntarily through doing yoga, through doing, like, some weird yoga position, like, I don't even know what it was, but it just, I remember it made me have an orgasm,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know how I did that. And then gradually I learned how to have an orgasm, and then I learned that, yes, if you squeeze your legs and you do certain things, you can have an orgasm during yoga class and no one will know.
Yeah, exactly.
And or maybe a couple people will know. Which is even better. So it's a cool thing to do. And I'm sure in your class a lot more people are doing that.
Yeah,
but I think in any kind of yoga there's always a couple of people that are having their little orgasm.
Absolutely. And I encourage it. I encourage that they get into sensuality, they feel sexy, and they get high. When I was recently, we did a big teachers' I do these seminars for teachers, and I said there was 200 people there, and I said, you know, if you think we're coming here to do yoga, you're mistaken. We're coming here to get high. And if you think yoga survived for 7,000 years because it's healthy, you're wrong. It survived because people want to get high. The need to transcend came very much at the same time. Religion and art appeared at the same time in human history because it was the need to transcend the mortal consensus reality because it's fucking boring. You know, politics has been going on forever.
And a little depressing because you die at the end. Yeah
exactly. So let's transcend. You know, we have this facility in orgasm at the point of the height of orgasm. You leave. You're gone. You're not here. So, you know, I mean, I've been spacing out for years. You know, I couldn't wait to get into drugs because it was just another way that I could feel sexual and transcend.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm doing it in a legal and healthy way, but it's definitely the same thing.
It is a pretty healthy way. I mean, that's the difference.
Yeah,
sure. It's about transcending, and so you can do that through drugs as well, and you can do that through sex. You can do that through all kinds of behaviors, but I guess that yoga would be one of the healthiest of the behaviors, even more healthy than aerobics, where you could, you know, sprain an ankle or have a heart attack. I mean, people don't have heart attacks doing yoga.
No, I mean, it just depends to the degree and what the type of yoga that they
do. Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of wacko yoga out there.
I don't know about the wacko yoga. Tell me about the wacko yoga.
Okay, I'm a yoga elder, which is a grand title, which is given to me by the a main body of yoga in England called the Independent Yoga Network. And basically we sit and look at novelty ha-ha yoga that comes up. You know, they put together all sorts of bullshit. But a lot of the time they put together stuff like, you know, we put ballet together with Pilates, with yoga, with this, that, and the other. And it's just an idea. And it actually has a deleterious effect upon people. If you're dealing with yoga from its roots, you know, people should come out of there just feeling absolutely buzzed out of their heads and feeling high. They should feel great. They should feel, there should be a wow, not an ow. That's basically what it's about. They should feel, wow, this is like so amazing.
Well, but you know, there's that other, there's maybe the S&M side, the yoga.
There's that as well. Of course, that's why, you know, without naming any types of yoga.
It hurts so good. People can hurt so
they'll go
good.
For that, sure.
You know, I mean, I can relate to that a little bit.
That's
as long as you don't hurt in a way that, like, broke something or sprained something. But let's get back to sex for
a
minute.
Okay, why not?
So,
let's do it. I was hoping you'd go there.
Okay, so have you ever had an orgasm doing
in
yoga?
Oh, yeah.
Or in a class?
Oh, yeah, I've had it in a class.
And the kind with ejaculation or the kind without?
Without.
Well, sure, without. How about
Because I pull it up. I pull it up through a technique called Uddiyana Bandha.
This is like a tantric.
Yeah, it inverts and it goes up and it's, whoa! But you actually don't know where you are, so it's difficult kind of relating to a class after that, but it's
okay.
Do you
tell them when that happens? Yeah.
That was mine. Yeah. So.
And can you tell if people in your class are having orgasms?
Yeah. It's very obvious. Because they start losing it, and which is exactly what I want. Because I want people to come out of there completely transcended. I mean, the idea of spirituality is not something austere. It doesn't mean sitting cross-legged. It means losing your identity, your ego. And you know, orgasm is a point where you lose your ego. There is no ego. You don't know where you end and something else begins. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you know, I mean, I have different kinds of orgasms, actually. I mean, some of my orgasms involve my ego.
Okay.
You know.
Sure.
But sometimes I lose it all. Big ones, real big ones.
That's
I mean,
great.
Some of the little ones, you know, my ego's going, oh, there was a little one. So do you practice tantric sex with your girlfriend?
Yes.
And what does that involve?
It just involves tantalizing, bringing it to a point where it means that you take the sex to a place which is so heightened that, again, you transcend. You transcend feeling just your sexual organs or just your skin. So it goes to such a deep place inside that your mind gets blown. It's an acid trip.
Is it possible you could tell me and my listeners some technique or something that we can do physically or with breathing that would enhance orgasm?
Sure. One particular technique, which is very simple, if you're having sex, if you've entered your partner, is to then exchange breath. So your mouths are together, and you breathe into their mouth. They inhale, they breathe out. You inhale, and you carry on like that. But you don't move the sexual organs. What you do is you don't try to control it. The organs themselves will start to move when they want to. You try to get your head out of the way. All the thrusting and all that bullshit, get off that. Just breathe. Mm. And the body actually knows what to do. And if you leave it to the body, because we're trying to control all the time, that's the problem. And so what we do is we limit the orgasm because we're trying to take the reins. If you let the reins go, it's fucking out of this world. Mm. So you just leave it, and it has its own time. And it just builds, and it builds like a storm above a prairie, and then it bursts. And it bursts by itself.
Wow.
Mm.
Sounds orgasmic. And, of course, if one of you eats garlic, the other one has to, something like that. Yeah. Okay, so now fast forward to the whole Israeli-Palestinian yoga map.
Yeah, okay.
What happened there?
I was invited to Israel, and they wanted me to teach seminars again for teachers, and I said, I'll do it, and there were some festivals as well. I said, but I'm not going to do that unless I can teach Palestinians.
Oh.
I won't teach Israelis unless I can teach Palestinians. That was my policy. So they said...
How did you come up with that? Did you just look at the situation, and you decided you would make a statement like this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's no different from Bosnia. It was no different for me. I've got used to war zones, and I don't demonize anybody. Everybody's the same on one level. So I said, if I'm going to be invited, I want to you know, also work with Palestinians. Listen, I'm a Jew. I went to a non-Jewish boarding school. They beat the crap out of me for two years. I was the only Jew there.
This is in England?
Yeah, I was always been an alien. So I've always sided with
the
people. Yeah, I've always wanted to say, well, you know, how is it for them? And always found that everybody's worthy. So for me, it's natural to want to know the other side of it. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'm coming only if you let me teach Palestinians. So they said, are you fucking nuts? I said, no, I want to do it. You want me there? Then invite me. So they said, okay. So they took me into the territories, and we went to a wadi with some beautiful Palestinian men and women, and we sat under a tree, and I put the boom box on and started playing Egyptian breakbeats. And they were looking at me like I lost my mind, and then they started getting into it, and they were screaming with laughter, and then, you know, it was amazing. And then,
so you went with some Israelis, into this Palestinian,
into the territories.
Wadi.
Wadi is like a dried up valley where a river used to be. Yeah.
And did anybody tell them you were coming, or?
Yeah, they said this lunatic's coming from England and he wants to teach you.
So these people wanted to learn yoga?
Yeah, the only yoga they'd ever seen is in a book with this skinny Indian guy sitting contemplating his navel. They didn't know it actually involved movement.
They maybe thought it was just meditation of some sort.
Yeah, and then they see me covered in tattoos.
Right.
And I've got, you know, Egyptian breakbeats. And then suddenly they realize this is fun. And we had a ball, and they wouldn't let me
leave. Now this, I mean, everybody, I guess, was nice to each other.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, were they talking to each other, the Israelis and the Palestinians?
I had two Israeli guys with me.
Yeah.
And they were... they were the guys who go in, and they've got dual passports, so they can go into Palestine, they can go through the borders.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Israelis, it's very, very difficult to go through the borders into Palestine, into the West Bank. So they had dual passports and they came with me. But they were telling me, listen, you know, it's dangerous and all that. I said, listen, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the day you're going to die is already written. And you're not going to go 1 second before it. So, you know, that's
and
why...
And this would be a good thing to be doing.
That'd be great. If I'm going to go out, let me go out doing this. You know, it's fine.
So how many times, did you just do it once?
No, I've been many times now.
Oh,
and
okay.
I go on a regular basis. Every time I go to Israel, I go into Palestine. So I have a big number of students in Ramallah, Jericho, Jenin. And now, last year we brought the first group of Palestinians and Israelis together in the first ever...
Oh, that's what I was reading about. So what happened there?
Okay.
And they were doing yoga together.
Yeah, in Jerusalem. We got permission.
I feel like I'm talking about, like, cats and dogs or something. Like, they were doing yoga together. It shouldn't be a big deal,
but it's
just disgusting that it is such a big deal.
But that's because of politics. That's exactly what we were saying earlier
politics
on.
Politics and religion. Yeah.
I know, that's right. It's two...
The
best
two
manipulators.
Boogeymen,
of, yeah.
Manipulators that make everybody hope.
Exactly.
And meanwhile, what are you doing? You're fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
You're hoping for peace and for heaven and for just these incredibly beautiful end stories. But right now, it's fighting. But
Absolutely.
Anyway, you've got this little island of yoga in the sea of war.
Yeah, I just got permission for these Palestinians to come across, and the Palestinians wanted to meet my Israeli students, and the Israeli students wanted to meet my Palestinian students, and they said, if you could put it together, wouldn't it be an amazing statement? Mm. I said, well, let's try to do it. So we had the Paris Peace Foundation try to get permission for these 18 Palestinian women to cross the border,
mm-hmm.
And the Israeli army refused it at 11 o'clock in the morning. They said flatly, it's not going to happen, we won't allow them to come in. And I was doing a television interview, and my manager said, listen, just give it up. I said, listen, I'm telling you, I got a feeling this is going to happen. She says, you're fucking mad, it's not going to happen. I was in the Israeli army, when they say no, it's no. I said, I'm telling you, I got a big feeling, and my big feeling has kept me out of being blown up in the Bosnian War, and I always trust my feeling. She says, you're nuts.
Well, okay.
Okay, so 4 o'clock came. We had till 4 o'clock. That was a deadline. 3 minutes before 4 o'clock, the Israeli army gave permission. And
all
18
right.
women passed what, across the border.
What made them...
Nobody knows. And like for yoga, they, you know, I mean, I've still to this day, I don't know what happened. Why they changed.
You've got to understand. I mean, I think you've got to pursue that. I mean, I'm very interested in this because our motto, one of our maxims here is peace through pleasure.
Beautiful.
Peace through pleasure.
Yeah.
And this is an aspect of that. Peace through yoga. Yoga is a form of pleasure, as you say yourself.
Sure.
It's a form of pleasure.
Totally.
And it's something you can do yourself, you can share with people.
Yeah.
It's a form of pleasure, and it's something to do.
Right.
As opposed to just dream about.
Exactly.
It's
practical.
You know,
though,
it's a practical thing that is healthy, but also gives you something to do with your body, because we need to do things with our bodies because our bodies want to do things. And if we don't give our bodies things to do that are sexy, they're going to do things that are violent. That's
Absolutely.
My opinion. And we take a lot of inspiration from the bonobo chimpanzees.
Hmm.
Are you aware of the bonobos?
Oh, totally.
Because they practice yoga, too.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know if practice is the right word, but they get into yoga positions.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're actually better at it than humans because they're very flexible.
Right.
And, of course, they have a lot of sex.
Sure.
And they seem to use all of this, sex and movement and give an exchange of pleasure as a way to reduce violent tension.
That's right.
And they have never been seen killing each other in the wild or captivity yet.
Yeah.
You know, we might drive them crazy when somebody, we might have the first sociopathic bonobo murderer at some point. But so far, we have not. And you know, to me, this is a very important message that you're transmitting, and that I want to see more of, because so many people nowadays are so cynical about war, because this war that we're in, I mean, we're always in a war. There's always war going on. But right now, we're in this particularly just, I mean, at least the war in Serbia kind of ended in a way. I mean, not totally, but sort of. And this war, this Iraq war, just goes on and on. And people, I see people rationalizing it. I see otherwise good people.
Yeah.
Just like those good Germans.
Yeah.
I see them rationalizing
and
saying that this this is the way it has to be.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
Is the only way I can have my plastic.
Yeah.
This is the only way I can have my SUV. I guess we have to go into Iraq and just fuck them up. You know? That's what has to happen. And it's kind of sad.
It's sad, and also the fact of the matter is driven by men. Look at the men who are driving these wars. And, you know,
you can blame the boys. But the women support, the women are there every step of the way, and the women are actually fighting this war, too.
Yeah.
Although, you know, we're kind of almost sort of semi-supporting the lady that's running for president. So.
Yeah, but if you go, you know, if you go back
hoping that maybe that'll change things a little estrogen, you know.
I think so, rather than the testosterone-driven wars, I know. But, I mean, if you go back 10,000 years B.C., we got matriarchal societies, and they're bonobo-based.
Yeah, they are.
You know?
That's true. I mean, bonobos are not exactly matriarchal, but they are kind of... The women, the females have a lot of power.
Oh, yeah.
They have a lot of power.
Sure.
And the males have a lot of power, but they only do because of their mothers.
Yeah.
The mothers of the males are the ones that hold the power, and if an alpha male... mother dies, he usually loses his power. They're all mama's boys.
Right.
That's one of the reasons they're so peaceful.
Hmm.
Other than getting laid a lot.
Right.
Getting laid a lot and having your mom around keeps you a peaceful
boy. That's
the combination is
irresistible.
Makes you want to lay around.
Sure. So sure. No, but I mean even the
do
the,
yoga.
Absolutely, but then you know there's very male-driven yoga, warrior yoga.
Yeah.
And the yoga that I do or I practice was you know, I looked at the people who I've been taking traditional yoga from for years and teaching it, and they were all warriors. I'd never met these men.
Mm-hmm.
They lived thousands of years ago, and I asked the question, what were the women doing? And they were the temple dancers, and they work with the belly. They sway their hips.
Yeah.
It's about the sexuality of, you know, so that was what drove me to taking what I do into those realms, and that's why it has to be sexy. It has to take you out of your head. It has to take you out of your positionality. Because ego has a position.
Mm.
It takes a position. It says, here I am, and that's where you are. But when you start moving, getting to sexuality, you lose your positionality.
Your positionality.
Your positionality. What about that? But it's ego. It takes an ego.
Okay.
And testosterone in males are about positions.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think that men are from Mars and women are from Venus. I think we're all from the same planet Earth, and we're more alike than we're different. And, you know, women can go to war. I mean, it's less likely. You know, I mean, Queen Elizabeth, actually, she was a pretty peaceful matriarch. But you know, Margaret Thatcher, I mean, she certainly wasn't afraid of banging her hair handbag on people. So, I mean, there are some women that so-called act like men, and there are many men that are, you know, very in touch with their feminine side.
Yeah.
And so I do think that we could all get more in touch with our feminine side, I guess. And the bonobos... Yes, they are, you know, if you want to say they're a little more feminine, or they're more into the feminine side of humanity, common chimps are more the masculine side of humanity.
They're not getting fucked enough. You know, I mean, the one of the things is I was a practicing witch for 7 years, and one of the things about being a warlock is you take an oath to the goddess. The male has to understand his position to a female, that the woman is the act of creation. Why was Satan the goat's head? Because the goat's head, the horns are the fallopian tubes, and the mouth is a vagina. Ooh. That was a map of creation.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I always thought that Satan was,
was
modeled
nose
after
on it.
Pan. You know, Pan, the,
the
god.
God Pan?
Yeah,
that's
the god
panic.
Pan with the horns. He had horns.
Sure.
And he was very popular
in
Italy. And I think that they wanted to take over all... the people that worship Pan, so they said, hey, your god, guess who he is? He's the devil. So, you know, at least that's what Aleister Crowley told me, that was Pan. And I went, oh, yeah, because Pan is really cool, and he's kind of one of the gods we play with here at the speaking. We love all the gods. We worship all the gods and goddesses, just in case.
Yeah, well, Pan is a god of panic.
Pan is the god of panic.
Well, panic comes, and when panic comes, there's no control. Mm. And through the gaps in the control comes a goddess, comes the natural order.
My guest is David Tsai, and he's yogabeats.com. yogabeats.com.
Yogabeats.com.
And I'm stuttering because I have someone telling me what question to. Here, you ask the question, Julian. This is Julian Nisberg.
Teaching in a women's prison.
Teaching in a women's prison.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Girls in bondage. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Everybody's interested in girls in bondage.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
No, I teach every Thursday at the highest security prison in South England.
Yeah. You're not afraid of those women all attacking you?
No, I'm not. I mean, to begin with, this scared the shit out of me because I walked into 60 psychotic women. There's 5 guards. I go through 8 2-foot-thick doors. I mean, they're 2-foot-thick, each door, and 2 airlocks to get to them. And they had a problem because they couldn't get any control on them, you know, physical exercise. They would, you know, they were trying to get people to come in and teach them aerobics and trying to teach them to do yoga and trying to teach them to do this and the other. And even in the gym, they were having problems. So they brought me in, and I, of course, immediately whacked up the Cuban rap, and we got them into Uddiyana Bandha, which is it's a way of changing someone's state if they're toxic. And most of these women are voluntarily on detox. They come into yoga, to my yoga, voluntarily. The human vagina can hold vials of heroin for weeks on end, and they're dealing inside. So when they
they hold the heroin in their
vagina.
Yeah,
in vials.
Well, how do they get it into their vagina?
Well, they go in with it, and they're dealing
they
with it.
They go in with it. When they get busted, they go, okay, I'm going to stock up on heroin and put it in my vagina?
That's how it goes.
Wow.
So, and up their ass and all that. So, yeah, so they're dealing
any orifice
will do. So they come in voluntarily, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and every week I go, and it's like this huge number of women, and it's incredible. In like 1 hour, they go from psychotic to grinning like idiots, and you know, they're all over me, and well, I mean, there's guards near me, which is great, but you know, they're going, "Are you coming back next week, sir? Oh, come back. Oh, you're lovely. Oh, let me touch your toes." And I mean, it's great. I mean, I love them. They're my dancing girls, you know. So I go in there every Thursday, and that's kind of built up in a big way. But what that showed to me, what was interesting, was that the possibility of changing something that's angry, psychotic, toxic, and that can change.
Uh-huh.
And if you can change that, and I work also with street kids on crack cocaine in Brixton, and we can change that with kids. You know, when I work with Palestinians and Israelis together, when that happened, I said, you know, there's no UN here, there's no politicians, there's no cooling off period. This is happening simply because we're changing our state. This
and
is humanity change.
You did yoga with some soldiers?
Yeah.
When was that?
I've done it in Bosnia.
In Bosnia?
Yeah, in Bosnia. I was training soldiers. That became a big thing over there. Because in war you take as much drink and as many drugs as you can, because that's, you know, you don't know how you're
going
to be around.
So
a
war going on, right?
Yeah. So
how are they doing it in Iraq? Are you ever tempted to go over to Iraq?
Nobody's invited me.
Right. Well, okay. Well, if they invited you, you would go.
Sure.
I'm not sure what kind of drugs they're doing there. I mean, I'm sure they're doing drugs in Afghanistan because they got a lot of.
Yeah, my brother's shouting, no, the mom won't let you.
mom won't let you go to Iraq or Afghanistan, really?
She didn't want me to go to Palestine, but I went, you know.
Oh.
bless, yeah.
You're not a mama's boy.
Oh, I love my mama. I love my mama.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good mama's boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so we should have these two boys come over here and add to the, to the mix here. That doesn't mean I'm getting bored. Okay.
Julian, bring the chair around.
I don't know what it is.
What was that? I can't hear you, sweetie.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweetie is my engineer. That's Brother Dave. Elias, sweetie.
Nice.
Okay, and here is Andrew, the brother.
Hello.
And...
Hi.
And Julian.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Susan.
Hey. So what's going on with you guys? Are you still doing the beastly bombing?
Not right now.
We're on hiatus.
You're on hiatus.
And trying to get it going in New York next. So,
hi, H.U., and did you come?
Yes.
So you did a show in New York?
We did.
Did we ever.
We did a week in New York as part of a festival, and went really well.
Yeah?
Standing ovation.
How are the New Yorkers?
Theater. What?
How are the New Yorkers?
They were...
Surprisingly receptive.
Yeah, we didn't
I'm
let
not
them
surprised.
We didn't let them know we were from L.A., so they had no reason to hate us.
There you go. That's good.
We pushed up. We were, like, some of us were from New York originally.
Yeah,
so.
From London.
Yeah.
So you had a good time, and but you're not doing the show in L.A. now. You're not doing the show anywhere right now.
Right now, we're taking a little break. And,
okay, and when's
trying
it going
to... either make it in New York or also try to see about a movie version or something of that sort, so...
The movie.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah.
What kind of movie?
It's the first, Julian.
What kind of movie? A beastly bombing movie.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah. You like Singing in the Rain? You love beastly bombing.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's like Atonement with Gilbert and Sullivan music and not rubbish.
Yes, it's great. Have you ever seen it, David?
I have. I just thought it was amazing. And I said that this would absolutely blow the Israelis away. I mean, seriously, blow them away.
Oh, yeah, you should do it in Israel.
Oh, God, they would so love it.
They would so love it. They would.
Do it there and Ramallah.
Some of them would so love
Ramallah?
It.
Yeah. Oh, most of them.
Ramallah?
Ramallah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ramallah Madingdong?
Yeah, and you should have Arab and Israeli audiences.
Exactly.
You should,
certainly.
You should,
certainly.
Or
all
Palestinian Israeli, you know.
Jews,
I mean, that would be tremendous.
Our poor mother.
Your mother would kvell.
She'd kvell.
Oh, are you kidding?
she would
love that.
Uh-huh.
She would be so proud of you.
She'd be tortured. She'd be horrified.
You know, that's the fate of a Jewish mother, is to be tortured. That
right.
is the inevitability.
Yeah.
She might as well be tortured while she's kvelling.
Right. I'm horrified yet kvelling.
It's true.
So, did you see Andrew when he was the president or the bomber?
The bomber.
Mm-hmm.
And
bomber.
That was, the funny thing was, when he was the bomber, he was dressed up as Al-Qaeda. I was in Jericho teaching 18 Palestinian women in front of the mosque while the imam was calling the faithful to prayer. And
they were doing headstands, right?
And
brokers.
I couldn't believe it. I said, Andrew, what the fuck's going on? You know, you're doing Al-Qaeda and I'm teaching in Jericho. It's like seriously insane.
Wow. So we got a bunch of Jews here. I just realized.
Spreading
peace. Yeah. You know, and I still have the menorah from Hanukkah. I haven't put it away yet.
I saw that.
You know, so I'm like, let's talk about the land. What's going on here? How can you think that Israel has a chance to actually stay in this neighborhood and be Israel, or what do you have any views on that?
There's lots of people, thank God, like you there, who are saying the same things as you're saying, as we're saying here right now. And they are in the majority. The minority are rednecks holding it into place. And
now, by rednecks, do you mean like settler type people?
Yes,
what is an Israeli redneck? A very
we have a big lunatic fringe there, you know, who are religious fringe, the Jewish fringe, you know. Who are going into the territories, and then there's on the other side we have the equivalent.
Yeah.
But you know
you know the weird thing is, when I was a kid, I remember the religious people were not political.
Yeah.
They were
absolutely.
They were like religious. They throw rocks at you if you wore shorts in the you know their area of Jerusalem. But they didn't get so involved in politics. Of course, that was why no one took them seriously.
Right.
Everyone just kind of, they're religious whatever.
Yeah.
We'll wear shorts.
Now they do.
Now they take them very seriously, and it's I guess true of a religious people of all kinds of the three big monotheistic religions, the three Abrahamic religions.
Yes.
Judaism, Christianity, Islam have all become so serious, become political. They've all become
Hindu
political.
Fundamentalists burning down mosques.
Well, there are. Yeah, we got to give it to the Hindus. Yeah, they're not Abrahamic. Yeah. That's true.
Everyone likes to burn down other people's stuff and hate someone.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, that's why the bombing is the beastly bombing is so great, because it throws that up as you know, the hilarity. That on one level it is, because in a sense always the thugs that keep getting all the, you know, the idiots who keep getting all the big PR. That's what the journalists are looking for. When I was in Bosnia, they were looking for all the idiots, you know, who have no education, who suddenly became the heroes of the people at that time in times of violence. They were looking for all the bad stories, and they always find it with these thugs.
But unfortunately, those are the people that talk loudest.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Because it's sensationalism.
It's a very exciting. They have all this exciting talk about you know, various types of Armageddon and they play upon hope.
Sure.
The hope that, you know, we're in the promised land. We'll be
and
in the
fear.
Promised land
and
fear, hope and fear
hope
at the same
fear.
Time.
But I think people
hope
like to. I think people like to feel special, and the way they feel special is feeling. Individuating themselves against other people who they can then hate.
We should all be hopeless and fearless, and then we'll be hateless.
What I mean, if more people...
On Fairfax?
On Fairfax?
There's
the
poster,
church.
Yeah, the poster on Fairfax.
No,
the
are you
church.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He says that the first way of understanding God is the first step of understanding religion or something.
You have
terrifying.
To talk more into your
I'm
microphone.
So sorry.
That's
is
what's
that right?
Going
is that
on
the quote?
Here.
Theater
not
actor.
Talking into your
I'm
microphone.
So sorry. I thought I was projecting. There's a poster up against the wall of a church on Fairfax, and it said, "Fear of God is the first step of understanding religion."
Fear of God.
Fear of
right.
God is the first step of understanding your own religion.
There you
which
go.
Which is, you know, just
that's
the most
true.
Damning statement of all. Religion.
And it's like, you know, picking up on that, I had, when we had this meeting of Palestinians and Israelis, I had one woman on the way to Jerusalem before the meeting. She said to me, she said, you know, I'm really frightened about meeting the Palestinians. So I said, why? She said, because they bombed the kibbutz and I never met one in my life.
Oh, right.
This is an Israeli.
They
so I said,
bombed the kibbutz.
Yeah, they.
Yeah.
So I said,
they
you
all
know,
did.
Yeah, they all did. So I said, you know, they're just as intelligent as amazing as you guys. I said, so the next thing I saw was the two of them, when they got to Jerusalem, they were embracing each other, and they were crying, they were hugging each other, crying, and I just thought, fuck, this is amazing. And it's the politics that keep people apart. We don't get a chance for this. Mm-hmm. You know,
okay, but let's get down to the nitty-gritty here, please. I mean, it is politics, I agree, and I agree that politics...
I still hate the British from the American Revolution.
How dare you!
There you go, see?
Yeah, you're right.
That's politics.
And
but,
the War of
but the whole idea of Israel is the idea of this Jewish state, right? How does that exist if you're not going to be discriminating against non-Jews?
You can live anywhere and you can share everything and you can still exist. There's room for everybody. But when you start making positions, you know, I mean, they got their asses kicked out of Europe. I mean, the diaspora there was a problem. There was a whole load of Jews that were moved out forcibly from one place, and they wanted to return to a place of their ancestors. I mean, that was clear. That was a physical thing that happened. But at the same time, you know, when you start arguing about borders, I don't share my food with you, when I don't give you sucker, these lines can be... It happened in Yugoslavia between... You know, politicians fearing up positions through religion and politics between people. People lived under Tito they were just Yugoslavians. Suddenly they're Bosnians. Suddenly they're Serbs. Suddenly, you know, all of that happens again. And you can, you know, Arabs, Jews, Palestinians, we're the same Semitic people. We're Semites.
And we're all from Africa anyway.
Yeah, okay. So we're from Bonobo. So yeah. There's no line unless we want to draw a line.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, I happen to think that the borders are going to eventually have to come down, and
yeah.
So we might as well be nice about it. You know, we might as well pull them down. We might as well tear down the walls.
But anyone with half a brain would pull it down. Anyone with half a brain.
I think the Israelis and Arabs have to get together and hate the Persians together.
The Persians. including the Persian Jews.
All the Iranians.
Yeah, my landlord, by
all
the way,
the
is a nice Persian Jew.
The Sunnis
Jew.
And the Jews should get together.
So, you know.
Yeah, I went out with a Persian Jew. I'm not going to that. What?
How was she?
She was fabulous. Mm. 7 years of it.
Oh, 7 years?
Yeah. Mm. You met her.
Who?
Shelley.
Oh, she was a Persian Jew?
Yes, she was.
Oh.
Fabulous.
Makes her more exciting.
A Jewess.
A Jewess.
A Jewess.
Very underused.
We Jewesses are very exciting.
You are.
Especially by all the Jews. A Jewess.
Anyway.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Jewess. Jewass? You like some Jewass? Well, you know, I mean...
I have a Jewish girl fetish.
He does.
They helped me out.
He became Jewish because of his Jewish girl fetish.
When I was a kid, I came from Italy, and everybody was beating me up because I couldn't speak, you know, English, and so they did all the exams for me, you know.
Right.
The Jewish girls at his school in New Jersey helped him pass the exam.
Yeah, you know, so there you go.
So he developed a Jewish girl fetish.
And then one of them invited me to Hanukkah. And I thought it was very strange what was going on in this house, you know. But she was beautiful.
Mm.
Yeah, so kind of got fetishized.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
So he married three different Jewish women. I'm the third. Three's the charm.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I converted. Yeah.
Sammy Davis Jr.'s rabbi.
Rabbi.
Good God.
But he didn't have to cut it off.
No. He says, all right, it's all right.
And my rabbi, when we were getting married, we had two rabbis because, you know, my mother is over the top. So the first rabbi was the general sort of synagogue rabbi, and he was actually Italian. And he just said, great, you know, you're Jewish, get married. So my other rabbi, who's a little more kind of, little slightly Orthodox, he's like grilling David, you know, like, okay, you converted, and what'd you do,
how'd you convert?
And then he goes, you circumcised? And, you know, I think David thought, well, he's probably going to check, so
get it out.
I have to say, he says, no.
Oy.
See his crotch tighten. And I thought Rabbi Cain was going to take you in the shed and chop it off right there. But he says, he's paused for a long time that made us just so nervous, and then he says, it's okay.
Wow.
I had a friend who converted who was circumcised, and they just had to prick him to, like, make a little blood is what they did.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
You say prick?
Yeah. So they
prick.
Prick, okay.
prick.
Yeah.
Are you talking about Sammy Davis? What was that?
Sammy Davis's rabbi is the one that David went to convert to Judaism.
Okay, because I got a story.
Okay.
Okay, Sammy Davis was friends with our father, me and Andrew. Our father's Frankie Vaughan. And he used to hang out with my dad, our dad. And he just got off on how, I suppose, the family way, our family and the way we are, and we hang together and everything. And he converted to being a one-eyed black Jew.
Really?
Yeah.
So your family was part of the Sammy Davis conversion?
Yeah, that was the story. Yeah.
Cool. Well, he had a lot of Jewish friends, Sammy Davis. I mean, Joey Bishop... I'm sure your dad... Who was your dad? What was
Frankie
his name?
Frankie Vaughan.
Frankie Vaughan, that sounds like somebody
he was,
that...
He was the... Kind of the British Tony Bennett, basically. He was a crooner.
Oh.
He was in a film, Marilyn Monroe, Let's Make Love.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was a smooth, wonderful gentleman.
Like my brother.
He's very... Thank you, dear brother.
Smooth, wonderful
He's
gentleman.
A very beloved English entertainer from the old school, and he played Vegas and Rainbow Room and, you know, Copacabana and did films here. But
he, was he in the Rat Pack?
No, he. Well, he would have been, but he, him, and my mother, our mother,
yeah,
who are in my flat right now,
right?
They escaped. They broke their contract with Fox and moved back to England because Fox wanted my dad not to be married to my mother, and every time they were at a party, my dad found himself surrounded by six cute girls from the rosters of 20th Century Fox, and my mother found herself, you know, surrounded by a bevy of, you know, hunks.
They wanted to break them up.
Which,
why?
Yeah, yeah. Fun as it may be, but they didn't. It wasn't cool for a male singer to be married and marketable at the time. And so they wanted them to be broken up. So he broke his contract with Fox and came back here. Came back to to London.
Where are
and,
we?
Went there. Based themselves there. So he continued his career in England. And
yeah.
Hey, do you guys, I know you're young, you remember a guy by the name of Tommy Steele?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I used to work for his brother, Colin Hicks.
Oh,
I don't know if you remember
him. Yeah.
What's his name?
Colin Hicks. Yeah, he
sure.
was in Europe by Europa di Notte. He's an interesting character, and I was his translator, and I was 15.
Oy.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Okay, well, we have history.
Look at that, huh?
All right, well, I think we're wrapping up.
Okay.
Okay? Yeah, I mean,
well.
You know,
yeah.
Right, we're going to wrap up.
Julian's got a lot of sex stories.
Well, no.
Give me a sex
part
story.
Of his body and your body.
This is not Fox Radio. We can extend things.
Well, I have to ask one question, actually, of David. Do you have groupies that you have sex with? Yoga groupies?
No, but they do follow me around. I don't pick up on that because I like to go deeper into it.
Well, you could go deep with a groupie. I mean...
The only thing is
groupies are people too.
Yeah, I know, but unless I get off on them, you know, if I get off,
you could get off.
But I mean, like all the way.
Oh.
All the way. I mean, my heart, my organ, everything. I don't, because that has to be involved as well. I like that to be involved. Otherwise, what happens is I start feeling ripped off. Yeah, there is that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want also
Why is there giggling over here?
Because, I don't know.
Why are the boys giggling?
Put that in your pants.
You're thinking that this is a good line.
Julian
and Rupees, I need to get off with my heart as well as my organ. So.
Julian.
He starts laughing at that sort of stuff.
You need to ask.
Yeah.
You need to say what they...
Talk to the microphone.
Come on.
Yes.
Need to know.
Come on.
Time. Andrew has a question.
No, I don't.
No, come on, Julian, it's time.
Well, there's a question about extreme flexibility and what could happen with it. I think Susan should take it away.
Oh. Okay, positions? I mean,
positions.
Extreme flexibility.
Yeah. Oh, that could be fun.
Some kind of
what do you
yoga
ask
sex position that...
There's lots. There's, I mean, just... what?
Solo.
I mean,
solo.
There's lots of...
Oh, do you give yourself head?
No, but I can get...
That's what he wanted me to ask my brother.
Okay, well, I asked.
That's kind of fucked up.
That's why you brought
He's
David
like,
here,
go
so that
ask
I would
your
ask him
if he can blow himself.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, I asked. Okay.
Well, you know, I got someone who can blow me for, you know, so she can do it for me, so... And it's,
Well, okay, but can... Well, we were asking,
I could, yeah.
You could?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to tell my mom.
He hasn't done it lately because he has someone that'll do it, but
he
could do it if he has to.
I mean, I've been in a war on my own.
In a war?
In a nervous place, in a dark place. Yeah.
When the groupies don't make his heart sing, then he has to do himself.
The first time I ever had sex was in a little dark room all on my own. It was great. Yeah.
So did you learn to do that through yoga, or could you do that when you were...
I could do it when I was a kid, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it was a pre-yoga thing.
Yeah,
really.
I just kept it going.
Can you do that too, Andrew? Or? Is that a family trait?
Yeah, it's a familial skill.
Yeah. Yeah,
Frankie Vaughn taught it to Sammy.
That's
why he lost his eye.
That's right.
You got to aim
he
right. You shouldn't do it in the dark. Guys. God. It is hazardous.
All right, you heard it.
You
heard it here. That's very funny. Great.
Okay.
Oh, that's why you came to the class. I know why you came to the class.
I understand.
Okay. Julian's trying to learn to do that.
Yes, he is.
I can give you private lessons.
All right. We got 2 days to learn it.
Okay. Are you going back to London in 2 days?
I'm going back on Thursday, so go back to the night.
Are you teaching a class on Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday. Wednesday, Silver Lake. Yeah.
Where is the class in...
Silver Lake Yoga Center.
Silver Lake Yoga Center.
Yeah, in Silver Lake.
Listed? Just off Rowena.
Just off Rowena.
Just off Rowena in Silver Lake. Yeah.
7:15.
Mm-hmm. So do you think people are all alike with regard to yoga, or is there certain cultural approaches?
There are. I make it my business to try to destroy concepts that people have in yoga.
So you don't think that Californians approach it in a certain way?
Oh, they do. But what I'm saying is that when people come at yoga with their concepts, I try to break it because I want them to have a much deeper experience.
Have you ever taught yoga for couples, like a tantric kind of thing?
Sure.
And do they have sex in the class?
No.
It's not that far.
No, not that far, no. No.
No. You ever want to teach a class? What about you doing it with one of your consorts? Teach a class and couples.
Yeah, no, I mean I don't do that outside of my own private life, but yeah, within my own private life.
Have you ever
life.
Thought about expanding your horizons in that way?
Not really. The only reason is that I'm so fully whacked out teaching all over the world. I teach all over Europe, and I have so much on my plate.
Would you like to have a class with porn stars?
Yeah.
Porn star yoga.
I'm fine with that. I work with pole dancers and
really?
Strippers and yeah.
Mm.
For who's that guy in London who has that big place in off Leicester
Paul
Square?
Raymond?
Paul Raymond.
Paul
yes.
Raymond.
Paul Raymond. Paul Raymond. Right.
Paul Raymond. Yeah.
From
that.
Magazine.
Yeah, the review bar. Yeah. And he has a magazine.
Right. He's got a Paul Raymond. He's still around, huh?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Well, okay then. So now we're going to wrap up.
All right,
now
we're ready.
Now we're going to wrap up.
Cool.
So
we've hogged the whole time.
We have hogged the whole time. People, you know, I'm sorry.
That's
now,
all right.
Now no one's in the... No,
I know.
Anyway.
It's all right.
So here we go. All right, and so... I guess we're going to try to get to your yoga class on Wednesday, and
cool.
We're going to hope that the beastly bombing comes back to L.A. in some form or another.
Me too.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know, guys. Everybody that comes to this place remembers those performances. I mean, they're just like,
really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you know your priest is coming to Eros Day?
Oh,
right.
Yeah, we know.
He doesn't want to wear his garments. Of course, a lot of the priests that come to the speakeasy don't want to wear their garments.
Well, I lost my pants.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think we're even.
Yes, the loss of garments.
Yeah, the priest is afraid he'll be defrocked if he comes here.
Yeah.
Well, he's coming here.
Oh, we have a lot of pants and panties and shoes in the lost and found, actually.
Yeah. Some of them we
I don't know how people leave here like that.
Over the bar.
But I did.
Yeah, how did you leave without your pants?
I don't know. I had a wonderful time, thank you. Just leave it
up. You can pick up your pants
totally
and lost
good
and found.
Suit. It's a one piece.
All right.
Okay, so we'll be back again tomorrow night.
All right, but before you leave,
what do we
we're live right now, and we're going to now switch you to a pre-recorded broadcast.
Yeah.
It's
Eros Day.
We've been running it all week.
Been running all. This is, we're heading into our ninth Eros Day on Saturday night.
That's
and,
right.
And you probably can't make reservations anymore. I think we're all filled up.
Are we?
I don't know.
Possibly.
Possibly.
And
maybe you can bribe the receptionist.
Okay. So if you've missed any part of this program, you can go to our archive section and listen 24 hours a day for free. This is free. Okay. And. What can I say? Say goodnight.
Thank you so much, David Tsai.
Thank you.
And Andrew.
Thank you very much.
And Julian.
Thank you.
And thank you, Brother Dave. And thank you, my darling listeners, for having us in your home or your cardboard box or your mansion on a hill, wherever you are. I want you to be good. I want you to be happy. I want you to pursue and cultivate the pleasures in life. The yoga of pleasure. Get into it. Make, like bonobos, not baboons. Make love, not war. Make love to someone you love tonight, even if that someone is you. And you don't have to be able to give yourself oral sex. You can just do it by hand. Okay? I love you.
From our house to your house, thank you for having us. And we'll be back tomorrow night. And remember this, lay down your arms and peace.
Mar? Can you come here, sir? Yeah.
How about that?
Yes, very nice. This one does need more attention than this one. This one's a little bit...
For all you perverts out there.
Yeah, we're all perverts.
I'm a pervert.
We're all perverts out there. And we appreciate your exhibitionist perversion,
no problem,
such as it is. Very, very nice. We like to watch eating of candy as well as eat our own candy.
If I do it real quick, I'm doing it for one fucking second, and that's
it. No, you're not.
All right, then I'm...
That's
it.
It's longer than that.
I did all night.